Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, I'm George Chen, and you're listening to SupDoc, a show where we watch documentaries with our guests from the worlds of comedy, TV, and other creative fields. This time, we're recapping Liza Mandeloup's 2019 documentary, Jawline, now streaming on Hulu. It's sort of the story of a teenaged Austin tester, a small-town Tennessee social media star in the making, or he thinks, but it's actually more of a mood piece about growing up extremely online. Our guests for this episode are Elijah Katz and Sophie Clem. Elijah is a Los Angeles native and a comedian who runs Margaret, a mid-city comedy show on Wednesdays at Akula Marquee. Sophie Clem is a graduate of Pratt Institute who works in fashion, and they're a couple who watched Jawline together. What a weird date night. And we had a lot of thoughts about fame, trying to make it, what the hell You Now is, and other dystopian takes. Now here's my talk with Elijah and Sophie. Hey, you're listening to SupDoc. I'm George Chen, and I am in the home of comedian Elijah Katz. Hey, how's it going?
What's up, man? How's it going?
Thanks for showing me around your place.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for coming through. Nobody comes down to South Central, man.
Yeah. I like that you have a lot of bits about South Central as well.
I have to address the monster in the room, yeah. I guess.
And we are going to be talking about the film Jawline. Oh, man. What can we say about Jawline? It's on Hulu. It's a movie. And it is starring. It's directed by Liza Mandeloup and had a great Sundance where it got picked up by Hulu. And now it is available. Do you have a Hulu?
I use my mom's Hulu.
Yeah. I think everyone's mom's Hulu is the way Hulu is mostly watched.
Yeah, no. Anybody's free to use my mom's Hulu if
yeah.
they need it.
Give out your Twitter.
DM me.
Slide into Elijah's DMs
you
for
can sublease
your...
my mom's Hulu.
Yeah, exactly.
If needed.
The Katz family Hulu.
We got like 3 more accounts we can add, I think.
Yeah. Though that's great. We have 3 listeners, so this will work out perfectly. So this is a film that is ostensibly about the main subject is this kid who's like 16 named Austin Tester.
Super 16.
Yeah, very 16. And he is on a social media platform that I had never heard of called You Now.
Yeah.
And I guess it's pre-TikTok. Because TikTok is more of a 2018 to now kind of.
Yeah,
moment.
I'm not super. This is my first introduction to You Now as well. But it seemed like almost like a cam site, but for children, you know?
Let's just directly address that. This is like an adult woman who is following around these children. And their shirts are off a lot of the time. They're just like, they also like, okay, so Austin lives in Tennessee in a small town. And he has an older brother who is kind of seems like a burnout.
Yeah.
And the other main subject of this film is this guy named Michael Wiest, who is like, I think I was saying before we start recording, he's like the Malcolm McLaren of young idiots. Like, Malcolm McLaren was the Malcolm McLaren of young idiots. So basically, he is the guy who's figured out how to monetize and kind of turn all these influencers into like a Playboy mansion, basically. It's like a Playboy mansion of underage boys.
Yeah, yeah. And honestly, they could have made the whole documentary about him. He was by far the most interesting character in it.
Yeah. What's your take? So I kind of asked you to watch this. I don't know if you were going to watch it without
I'd heard about it. Yeah. I heard a story about it on NPR. Mm-hmm. And it's so not a world that I care about in my day to day. But I like explorations into things I don't know about. And it was done artfully, mm-hmm. at least, which is nice. You know, the director definitely like has an eye for, you know, image composition and like narrative and like actual getting... trying to get to the meat of these people.
Trying, you know,
there's not much,
not much meat on that jawbone. Like I would say the aesthetic of this is very pretty. Mm-hmm. And I was reading an interview with her where she was kind of talking about it as like the female gaze. Like this is a film that is, and then, you know, I was thinking about the reverse version of this movie is a bunch of 30-something dudes hanging out with a bunch of teenage girls.
Yeah.
And that documentary probably exists, but it is probably not going to get picked up at Sundance by Hulu.
That's it's probably not allowed in some countries.
Getting picked up by some other streaming sites that are not allowed
Definitely did focus on just the female gaze. Something I was kind of wanting to see was the male fans.
They didn't really delve into that too much.
I'm sure there's young male fans, but I'm sure there's also an army of creepy older men that love these boys too and probably spend a lot of money on them as well. And they didn't focus on that at all.
Well, they did. Okay, so Michael Wiest is identifies as gay.
Sure.
And he actually had these really interesting moments where he's like, "You're leaving your male fans out by saying, hey, you guys." And like that was a very bizarre meltdown that happened in the Playboy mansion of Los Angeles where all these influencers are living. And I was like thinking about that as well, like because, you know, it is 2019, but a lot of these bro-y, like, you know, teenage boys are probably kind of homophobic. That are just taking their shirts off for the internet for women.
Yeah.
And not even women, girls.
Yeah.
So like I was thinking about that, like the meet and greets they're doing. I'm like, they've gotta be some like kind of some underage gay boys that want to meet them as well. And I wonder if they are as nice to them as they are to the girls.
Sure. And I'd guess probably not. Probably
that would be my vibe. I mean, I would like to think Austin at least would be, you would give him a hug or something.
They painted a very wholesome picture of that guy.
He also seems fine with sleeping with his best friend and his brother in bed without their shirts on and a bunch of kittens running around.
I noticed that as well.
Which is very like, it was a little bit of like decline of Western civilization kind of in that household.
Yeah.
I was actually thinking about that in terms of like the gendered part of this movie, right? It's a female director. Mm-hmm. And I think I've listened to some interviews she did where she talks about like, she just wanted to do a story about teenagers being in love and in the society that we have where everything is mediated by our phones. Hmm. And then it just took this left turn into this world of like meet and greets with social media kids.
Right.
And like, it was really, it, to me, like an anthropological view, because I am so removed from this world. It sounds like you're removed from it as well.
Yeah, no, it was a
good
survey.
But it's closer
survey.
To your generation than my generation.
Sure, yeah, I'm at least familiar with some of the talking points. Mm-hmm. Yeah, even if I don't like involve myself in that world.
Right, like people you grew up with might be in that world or something.
I know some Austin tenors. I know a couple.
Yeah.
And
but in LA, they might be like actually trying to act or model or do something. And there's nothing like, there's no skill involved in this, as far as I can tell.
There's no skill. Austin definitely did work hard. He works hard at like a weird.
Right. He's persistent.
Yeah. He has to work hard to take a lot of photos of himself and I mean, there's also the self-work, you know, like what a bodybuilder does. They go to the gym and work out to make their body good. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's actually working on that level. The LA people seem to be more on that tip of really sculpting themselves. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there was some minor plastic surgery and stuff at that point.
with someone who's under 18 getting plastic surgery?
I'd imagine so. I mean, I had friends in high school getting nose jobs and stuff, you know?
Were they trying to act, or what were they doing?
It was usually Jewish girls with wealthy dads. Yeah, and it was all superficial, which is not necessarily a bad thing.
Well, I just think about getting plastic surgery that young, and like how does the, you know, plastic part age as well? You
know? It's a good question. I don't know.
You have not seen the follow up. Well, you know who should I? You know someone I'm completely fine if they get plastic surgery. Artie Lang.
Yeah,
I kind of wish he would.
No, he needs to.
I think we could. We'd all chip into a crowdfund for that.
If there was a GoFundMe for Artie Lang, it would. Even his haters would contribute to it.
Yeah, it's just not right.
Yeah, no, nobody.
The Voldemort look in comedy is not. I mean, to not just completely sidetrack into an Artie Lang discussion. Where is that documentary?
Why do that's I always come out. End up talking about Artie Lang? What's up? Every time I'm
welcome
on a podcast.
Welcome to Artie Lang podcast. You're talking to your number one and number two Artie Lang fans, George and Elijah. No, but yeah, gender flipping this whole film. Or like just the idea of like nascent, the fact that it's like, it's kind of addressed how this is like teenage girls having these fetishized, you know, having this weird intimacy with these guys who really don't have a lot to offer as far as I can tell.
Except for the fact that they're not abusive, it seems like.
Right.
A surface level relationship that they share with the girls. And you were talking earlier about like teenage love, mm-hmm. and there definitely is like a weird modern love going on, because the girls are all in love with the guys, and the guys preach a message of love towards the fans, but probably personally don't actually love the girls.
Well, I mean, I remember being a 16-year-old boy. I think your concept of love is very odd and not really, you know, I'm definitely not as wholesome as that you could have this kind of relationship with a bunch of strangers. Well, like they're fully exchanging numbers and like texting all the time.
That,
and stuff.
That was the part that got weird to me.
Yeah.
In that you're talking about the scene at the mall.
At the mall, like afterwards. Austin is like, trading numbers with these girls and like can't remember their names.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, no, I'll text you later.
And they were like being offended.
That he couldn't remember their names. Yeah.
Yeah.
You only have 2,000 followers. Can't you remember their names?
Yeah. And the girl was like, if you don't know how to spell Michelle, we're going to have a real problem. And I know how to spell Michelle, but I could spell it three different ways.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But that part freaked me out, because that made me realize like how much emotional labor Austin is exposing himself to mm-hmm. by doing that. And I think that's another element of where the hard work for him comes in. Is he now has to, he was kissing those girls. He was hugging them.
Oh yeah. Like he would give them full on the mouth kisses for Instagram.
That was twisted to me.
Yeah.
That's where it was dark, but that's like a lot of these girls seem like they were going through a lot. They mm-hmm. might've come from, you know, abusive households and stuff. And he's now like their rock in a way. And that's like a lot to put on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Even if he's not doing it consciously, mm-hmm. you know, he has 1,000 girlfriends, you know, you know,
right. I hadn't thought about it like
that. And
right.
Even if he's not providing personal support, emotional support to them when he's doing his videos and stuff, you know, it's like they're hanging out with him.
It's like he's not a sex worker, but he's doing like the work of a therapist or something.
Yeah.
In some way,
yeah.
With or like no training.
It's like proto sex work.
Right, because they're also like they're so young that they probably, a lot of them haven't even had sex or anything.
Yeah.
Or like it's just like they're forming their concept of like roles of male and female, like kind of through this weird system as well.
Yeah. And it's kind of always existed. You know, we've always had like pop stars that people look up to, mm-hmm. and now it's just like democratized. I guess.
Right. Well, it's funny. We were just talking about how, you know, TikTok is the new platform now. And I heard that also like on, I think it was like on another podcast. It might have been like The Frame. They're talking about like, oh yeah, TikTok's more democratic. I'm like, that's ironic because it is a Chinese company where they censor like protests from Hong Kong.
Yeah.
So it's like, is it democratic? I mean,
it's still a corporation that's, you know, controlling everything. I mean,
that's the only democracy we have anymore. Mm-hmm. Freedom of like, what platform do you want to like dedicate yourself to posting?
Right,
on?
Right. So it's a pseudo democracy because, mm-hmm. and also like the choices of who gets popular is children. Mm-hmm. Which is interesting.
In a sense, like, right. It is before the system of like the boy band system, which can go back to, you know, Menudo or the Beatles or like, you know, any, you know, before the 90s, 2000s boy band waves. There is always that figure, this Svengali, the manager, the, you know, the exploitative person. And in theory, that's not happening here. It's just children set free in this ecosystem that are not having. But then there is always we got Michael Wiest in the picture.
Yeah. Well, and it's kind of like at any point also with like any. I struggle to call this an art form, but like any creative work, I guess you have the choice to like stay independent or go corporate, you know, like mm-hmm. as we say in music, like sell out. You know, mm-hmm. but I think in the Instagram stuff, you have like that is the move. That's
the point of it, essentially. Yeah. Like being kind of cult on Instagram does you very little good. It seems like.
Yeah. And I think the point is to sell out. Mm-hmm. And but it's still initiated at the bottom.
Right.
As opposed to, I guess, the old school would be the top music executive starting it mm-hmm. and then putting that out there.
Now, it's interesting that you talk about selling out because I didn't know that that was still a part of any conversation that people under 30 were having.
Right.
Like, it seems like there was no more qualms about, because I kind of came up in the era where that was like the big issue.
Sure.
In at least underground culture was like how corporate it was going to end up being. And now it seems like it's not, I don't really. Firstly, I don't talk to enough people about it mm-hmm. or I'm not involved in that scene as much anymore. But also like, you know, I think this we could draw parallels to comedy as well. But like we're going to talk specifically about music. Like there was more of an ecosystem to be not huge. There was like an ecosystem to be a mid-level, you know, working musician at some point. And it seems like that has somewhat vanished. So I think the options are either become big or toil away for no chance at anything or give up. So.
And I'll tell you, at least on a like a personal basis, I hear in conversations people criticizing people for selling out for making those choices. But I think you got to make your money, mm-hmm. you know, like it's a tough gig out here. Now, Bob Dylan doing a car commercial, that's something else. But mm-hmm. like if, you know, one of my buddies is broke as fuck and somebody offers them $3,000 for their song to be in a TV show, I think that's totally chill.
Yeah. I do wonder what these what are we calling these kids, by the way? Are we going to call them influencers? Are they influencers? What are they?
When I've been explaining the documentary to people, I've been calling them Instagram pretty boys.
Okay.
But influencer might be what they
aspire to be,
or like the conventional career title for whatever it is. But I don't know. Instagram models? No, I don't.
Sure. Like, yeah, like it, to me, it's not really modeling. I think you get to the point where you're an influencer if there is companies paying you to market something.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And there are maybe the ones, there's people in the film that are there.
Yeah.
There's the people that are basically being managed by Michael or the people that are going on these tours. Wait, was Austin on the same tour that Michael was running?
No.
He was a different tour.
So Austin idolized these twins.
Yeah.
He got with their management company and went on a tour with them.
Oh, and that's the guy in the empty office building.
Yes. Yes.
His name eludes me at the moment.
The complete opposite of Michael.
Right.
Like a complete in the shadows, you know, quiet. Yeah.
Another exploiter.
Yo, basically. 100%.
The nature of this social media business is making as much money as quick as you can, because everything has a expiration date and a time limit. My goal is to capture the ones that I think are better than the rest, take them, rebrand them, monopolize that, so that everyone who's not part of that vision is taken out of the industry, so that it keeps quality control up and more money in my pocket. It's like the gold rush. Right now it's like literally the social media gold rush.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I also took a moment to look at the IMDb comments on Jawline, which just basically, it was only in festivals and it just hit Hulu about a month ago. So here's a great one I'm going to read to you guys from Goth Disco Queen.
Oh, Goth Disco Queen.
Gives it 5 out of 10 stars. And so these are not my words. These are Goth Disco Queen's words. Too superficial. As a teenager who has grown up in the infamous Lynn Garden Drive area of Kingsport, the producer of this film and Austin both missed a great opportunity to truly expose what holds youth back from fame, especially in a rural area. Many will argue that this can't be considered a rural area because we have a huge factory, an entire area of mansions, and we're only 30 minutes from a decent mall. But there's a class split between the rich and poor that many are too blind or privileged to see. You don't understand it or see it until you live on a street without sidewalks and there are people tweaking out constantly, walking down the road, and you can't go outside. You go to sleep at night and your leaking, molding ceiling drenches your mattress. Half of the people your millennial sister went to high school with are on meth, have kids who have kids, and they're all in the arrested papers from an array of domestic assault to drug charges. You can't join any extracurriculars to become a teacher's star, studded favorite, because you can't afford the thousands of dollars worth of band fees each year. And there's still not enough money with both of your parents working jobs because the best you can get without going back to college is a factory job. There are youth way worse off than Austin, but there are also youth way better off than Austin. Youth that could skyrocket way past his level of fame with the money they have. Austin truly missed an opportunity to expose beyond a couple of short jabbing statements and briefly heart-wrenching scenes, the bitter truth. If you're born into a trash in a town like this, you are most likely going to be stuck in trash. Even with the small boost of fame he received, he wasn't lucky enough to raise the bar. He's aware that this town doesn't have much to offer. He's aware that there's not an easy help for kids that have lost their way, and not fully exposing those issues lost a lot of potential sympathy and documentary content beyond scenes of goofing off and flashing the luxurious life of being on tour. If it wasn't for the unpleasant, anxiety-inducing struggles that low-income youth have to suffer, maybe Austin would have had the energy or funds to continue on without falling behind. But in a town like this, it's not always enough to just chase your dreams. You really have to put in work and go through disappointment, being more broke than you ever have before one week, just to hopefully have the most money you've ever had the next. It's a lot of sacrifices staying the course and not becoming a product of your environment, especially when your part of your environment has been abusive. If the film hadn't tiptoed around so many negative subjects relating to the environment he's dealt with, maybe audiences would be more sympathetic. Maybe we would be able to expose the true grit of escaping a town with low opportunity and low expectations, and we wouldn't be a lost statistic. Being trapped as a product of your environment doesn't just happen in your television dramas or in a famously notorious town like Chicago. It happens in places like Kingsport, too. Austin is awfully inspirational and luckily still conventionally attractive enough to grab attention from masses, but he's looking to the masses of people to inspire. Maybe next time we'll get a film that isn't afraid to go further than the surface and raise the bar for rural towns.
Interesting.
Yeah. That was a lot longer than I didn't really read that ahead of time. So that got darker than I was planning on.
It's all good. They had a lot of feelings about it.
Yeah, I mean, there is sort of like, that is a major part of the story, I think, is like she wanted to find someone who wasn't in New York or LA.
Yeah.
And she found this kid in a small town who seems to be like lives in a house full of cats. I have no problem with that. He has, you know, they have a house. It seems pretty nice, actually. Yeah. But it seems like he basically dropped out of high school to pursue this. And watching this whole thing, I'm like, That's a bad idea.
Yeah.
Because you're not smart enough to get a GED. He's kind of like a blank slate dude.
No, they were definitely very not smart people, unfortunately. Whatever. I'm not trying to be ableist against their against Austin's intelligence, but no, I mean,
you said you're sapiosexual. That was
the review is right though. Like, it is very hard to escape the class you're born into. Mm-hmm. A little Marxist reviewer over here. Mm-hmm.
But still, to give it a 5 out of 10. That's worst grade.
No,
it's like, I'm glad to see Kingsport represented somehow, but it's not represented the way I would do it, basically.
Yeah, I'm confused by a bit of their explanation for it. They were like, we're not rural, okay? And then went on to explain like very rural white trash stuff. Everybody's on meth.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not an opioid, I guess. That's one thing you can say about that.
There we go.
Okay, here's another review from IMDb. I'm just going to read this review from IMDb from Volfan. This Volfan said 1 star out of 10, very biased. Very biased. There's no ED involved. I live in the same town as Austin, and the movie portrays Kingsport as something it's not. The town is very much not rural. Most would argue that we actually live in a bubble of wealth because of the Eastman Chemical Company.
Mm.
I actually went to school with Austin, and when people found out about the movie, they laughed at the idea of it. The movie is very far from the truth, so I wouldn't believe a thing about it. If you really want to watch an inspiring movie, don't watch this. They stretch the truth to a very jarring degree. So, Volfan, not a fan of this film.
I love how everybody in Kingsport was like, they misrepresented Kingsport. Let's go on IMDb.
There's the Yelp for Kingsport. If you thought you were gonna get a bunch of boys at the mall, that mall also seemed pretty empty overall. That was a pretty sad mall.
Yeah, I mean, it was standard like dying middle America, and maybe I'm just being a coastal elite right now, but
no, we
got
dying malls in LA, man. I've been to a dying mall for sure.
But I think like having a chemical factory doesn't mean you're a bumping part of, you know.
Yeah.
Like, they're like flexing it.
Yeah. everybody's flexing it.
Hi, Sophie.
Sophie also saw this film.
Yeah.
And I think has some thoughts on it that we'll share the mic when it comes.
Yeah, feel free.
When it comes to me, yeah, totally.
Yeah. There you're exactly. It's a flex on the Eastman Chemical Company. Yeah.
No, they like have it in their Tinder bios. They're like fully flexing.
Like, I work at the chemical company. Like, that's also, that's the real Joker origin story. The chemical company. So what did you guys make of the focus? I wanted more Michael. I thought that he's at least has, you know, an angle.
Yeah, no, for sure. And also, I mean, that first review had a point too. It seemed like they really did tiptoe around the darker subjects.
Mm-hmm.
I think there were darker subjects in Austin's life, darker subjects in Michael's life.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they did that so he would let them use his footage and stuff, but like they didn't really go into
the family.
Yeah,
I think a 16-year-old kid, usually the family would be part of the story.
Yeah,
and you think you see his mom.
Yeah,
was there a reference to the dad?
They said all he did was drugs, alcohol, and beat them.
Yeah,
yeah, and I guess they would lock Austin in a room.
Oh man,
growing up.
They would like lock him in a room and the mom would bring the meals through the window so the dad didn't see.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So he's got some abuse, I'd imagine if you're an Instagram model, chances are you were abused. That's just my guess. The family was very supportive, though. Honestly, I thought they were sweet in the, in the small parts that they did show them. They made his career choice seem slightly noble to me. I don't know. I felt slightly, even though Austin's, there's not much to him, I was sympathetic towards his cause. You know, they were just like, you know, we don't have much going on. You know, Austin has this opportunity and we really hope he gets it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And like, in a way, we're also, you know, pursuing creative careers where I don't know how your family is. My family's pretty supportive generally, but I have some extended family who's like very unsupportive.
Mm-hmm.
And
like they leave comments on your YouTube and stuff.
They just always are calling me, telling me to go back to school and stuff. Really? Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
They're all doctors and lawyers and stuff. So they have much more like set careers and stuff. And
was there some sort of implication at some point that they were like, they thought you should become a lawyer or a doctor or something?
I mean, they live in Canada. They're not in my lives that much. Mm-hmm. But when I do visit them, they're always just pressing on me to go back to college.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it's interesting. We probably, you know, there's a lot of people that think what we're doing is, you know, crazy or like,
yeah, but we have self-doubt because we have self-awareness.
Amen. No, and I'm constantly doubting myself. Yeah. Constantly. So you know what? You're right on that. No, the Instagram guys all have blind optimism.
Yeah.
Which I think they need to do that.
That's what's unclear to me about Austin. Like, he doesn't seem like he has a realization that he's kind of screwed himself. He just sort of like goes into a depression.
Yeah.
And then he's like, better just get back to the camera. Got to get back on you now. This worked once.
Yeah.
Why couldn't it work again?
It was like a depression without introspection.
Yeah.
Which is where the actual growth comes from.
Yeah. I don't feel like there was much growth. And I also understand not wanting to be in high school.
Yeah.
That's
totally
like a relatable thing. But it's like, in your case, I think you're going to at least need that piece of paper.
Yeah, he really needs a GED.
Yeah.
He really,
yeah.
That would help that guy out.
I mean, that to me was the real stakes of this thing was that he was going to be held back a grade.
Yeah.
Because he took time off to go on this.
He actually hurt himself.
Social
media
tour.
Yeah,
he definitely
hurt him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was negative because he could probably just coasted along and at least graduated at a normal time period, but
yeah.
Like if he was held back again, then he'd be like older than everyone and be like, oh, he's a washed up 17-year-old,
yeah,
essentially, and that would be kind of even worse in a small town.
If
someone who went to high school with him took the time to like talk shit about him on IMDb, it would be much worse to just stay in that environment for a while. So
no, in a way, he's only made his life like harder by doing this. Like he's screwed himself over at school. Everybody in his town makes fun of him.
They all get ads for Hulu.
Yeah.
They all are seeing like this stuff as well. I do also wonder, like, I did think about the exploitative nature of like Michael and the exploitative nature of the film itself.
Mm-hmm.
And but then you can't really exploit someone who's putting themselves out
is
there.
Is asking
the
to be exploited.
That the goal is to be exploited, right?
Also,
he's winning in a way that I don't think we would consider winning, but he's winning at he's getting a degree of fame from being in the film that is about, I'm glad this is a film that does not, you ever play a drinking game where you drink every time the name of the movie is said?
Yeah.
Which is like a lot for a movie like The Avengers or Batman, but like not once in Jawline.
No, they never say
it. Actually say it.
But, when I first heard about the movie on NPR, it was the filmmaker on NPR, and she was saying when she said the name to all the boys, they all understood it immediately. Because that's the one thing they all share, mm-hmm, is a like tight jawline.
Which I didn't know was such a big deal. I didn't think that a jawline... I've heard that a strong chin matters, but I've not heard much about... Maybe I'm just not on the blogs about jawlines.
Yeah, or, Sophie might have input into
like,
that.
I feel like the twins did not have that strong of a jawline.
Yeah, no, they were pretty round faced.
Like, I'm like, I don't know about that. They were kind of random.
But they actually seemed like they were kind of funny.
They were like,
yeah.
They like, I wouldn't say any of these people had comedy chops, but they had like more charisma, I think, than Austin had. I wouldn't say Austin had charisma.
They were like the maybe the young TikTok like garden boys.
Mm-hmm.
They were just like they're just twins.
Yeah.
Who, like, do things together. And people are like...
Twins are always marketable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But so maybe they each have like half of the jawline. The other people had it together.
It's one like, side of a jaw between them. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I when it comes to chops, it was always hilarious to me when they'd have those big arguments in the LA house. Uh-huh. And then you'd see the video that they ended up making and it was...
dog shit.
To put it kindly, yeah. Dog shit. Like they'd have a huge
offensive
argument.
To dog species. Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. I just the type of big arguments they'd have over the most vapid content was hilarious. Was hilarious to me.
Right, yeah.
Like of them just dancing shirtless and they'd argue for an hour about it.
Yeah, I gotta say the move that Michael makes near the end does seem like just straight homoerotic, right? Like it's just like. Two dudes shirtless, like hugging each other.
Oh, that his career. So I think this is what I was assuming was that the issue with the last clients is that they accused him of sexual harassment.
Yeah.
The boys we saw earlier.
Oh.
So my guess is he's like, okay, I'm just going to do gay guys now. Yeah. So that they won't. Like,
yeah.
So that I can touch them and they won't, you know, call me out for it.
Okay, interesting. So it's like these kind of like dumb teenage bros trying to get it, cash in on Me Too somehow.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, like, I could see Michael pulling some.
You could.
Yeah.
Because you think he's a straight villain?
I don't think he's a straight up villain, but like, I think he's got some like pervy vibes. A little bit.
I think, yeah, he is definitely, like, he's interesting to me because he's, like, the character, like, in every movie, like, Amadeus or whatever. He's, like, the guy who wishes he could be the center of attention.
Sure.
But he's, like, I'm just going to work my machinations around the periphery of the talent.
Yeah. He's, like, trying to make them Sims. They're his little Sim
characters. Yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah, I don't know if he's straight villain either, but his intentions are definitely not noble.
No. You know? It's very cynical, very cash in, but also just like it makes more sense. Actually, what he's doing makes more sense to me than what they're doing.
Yeah, well, he's smarter than them. He's definitely a smart guy, you know, even if I don't like support ethically, what he's doing.
Ethically questionable. I actually was reading a bit about the TanaCon phenomenon, I sent you that article. I think it was Refinery 29.
Yeah,
did a piece about how he was involved. Firstly, I didn't know who Tana was.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that whole fiasco.
She's a YouTuber, and then they it was like to try to do. There's so many things that were new to me when I went down the rabbit hole of this movie. This movie really did introduce me to a lot of shit.
Mm-hmm.
This and the Travis Scott documentary really just were like, okay, I'm old. VidCon, it was like to compete with VidCon, and VidCon was something that I had just learned about in that same sentence.
She put out a video that said VidCon was elitist and that Tara Khan was for everybody.
Yeah,
that was her whole. And by that, by everybody, she meant too many people than they could fit in the building.
That's like, that is a problem. That's a problem I wish I had.
Yeah.
You know, like, I wish I had a problem with too many people interested in this thing.
That's something I was thinking too. Is there any part of their life that I do wish I had? You know, like, is there anything you envy about them?
I mean, like, I just realized I looked at my Twitter today and it says, like, I've been on Twitter since March of 2009.
Yeah.
And then I looked at that. I'm just like, man, what happened? Like, I thought people have had total meteoric takeoffs on Twitter. And I was like hoping I didn't know what I was going to get out of Twitter. But definitely I've other than a handful of retweets by other people that have been somewhat well received. I have not been able to turn Twitter into anything. And I guess it's the same with. I would hope it'd be more representative, at least, of like a thing that I am trying to do, which is comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, it didn't really go anywhere.
Yeah, my account's a decade old as well.
Yeah,
and it's great that they show you that and won't let you take it off of your profile.
Right, right.
Just for everybody to see that you've been doing Twitter for 10 years.
Right. Well, to the point I decided the other day to just make it private.
Nice.
And then I unmade it private because I was tweeting at Andrew Yang, and then I realized he couldn't read anything I was tweeting at him.
Right on.
So I was like, okay, yeah, what? I'm just paranoid about identity theft at this point.
Got it.
I've got enough social media trail behind me that I'm like, I'm probably going to start needing cleaning this up a little bit.
Yeah.
Not because of any photos with me putting anything on my face. Actually, I have a story. I have never done blackface, just to clarify.
George deleted 7,000 tweets.
I've never done blackface. I did a costume where it would have made sense if I had done blackface. So that's all I wanted to address in this moment.
And he's admitting to it.
Right. Well, I'm also not going to be the leader of anything or get on SNL anytime soon. So, yeah. I will probably have to scrub a handful of things off my YouTube and my Twitter. I mean, it just depends. Like, there's also just stuff that maybe... There's probably episodes of this podcast I should delete to, like, make things... Just to be squeaky clean. I mean, I was thinking about talking about this on stage. I'm pretty uncancelable for the most part. I've got like some logic behind why I think that is the case.
Yeah.
I'm sure someone listening might want to challenge that, but I feel pretty assured in that. But also, these guys exist. Okay, so there's maybe a premise. Here's maybe a premise that has to do with a generational thing.
Mm-hmm.
Your entire, like the amount of dedication people have to the platforms is like almost total, right? It's like the cult that you choose to be in, right? Like you're like, I'm just going to be a You Now guy. I'm going to be a TikTok person. I'm going to be a Snapchat.
Sure.
Like, and it is just like nonstop broadcasting your life. And, I have the consciousness of like, yeah, I can decide to make my Twitter private. It only affects like 3,000 people and it doesn't affect them very heavily. I'm sure they're not just like, what happened? The ones that follow me can see it. So it's fine. I did the same with my Instagram. And the only reason I don't keep it that way is I guess I want to promote this clip or I want to promote this thing that I did or whatever. And so then I'll just kind of like toggle off and on. But I have this sort of, this division between a public self and a private self. And I think like what these boys don't have enough of a developed private self at all. Anyway, like there's like the idea of selfhood is interesting in this film, right? Mm. 'Cause like what is even interesting about being, like a boy who is 17 with like a tight jaw or whatever.
No, true. And those twins at one point said, you know, you need to kind of choose which parts of yourself to put online and like which parts are interesting.
Yeah.
And well, when Austin was interviewing them.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, he wants to like save the world.
They all have these very vapid motivational statements.
It is like the era of scammers. I don't think they're scammers, but I feel like the entire kind of hustle culture is a scam. There's a lot of, you know, productivity scammers, a lot of just like the wellness world kind of also. A lot of these things are scammy. In a way, they're offering a pure product, which is just them. They, you know, their product is fairly pure.
Yeah.
It is just them. Like you get what you see.
Yeah.
Well, like coming from Austin, I feel like it's like honestly just like believe in yourself, follow your dream, rather than like work really hard all the time, because I don't even know, he doesn't have like an understanding of like what working hard means,
right?
Necessarily.
It's clearly not in school. He was going to be held back a grade anyway, probably.
Yeah, like for him, like believing in yourself is just like kind of doing what you want to do. And him doing what he wants to do is like dropping out of school and like talking to these teen girls.
Yeah.
Not trying to like, you know, diss him, but just like, honestly.
Well, I feel like we've been dissing him this whole time.
Yeah. And I think that's okay.
I think it's okay.
He put himself under the public eye.
Yeah.
Also, I think this film is the best thing that could happen to him.
Yeah.
At this point in his career. Like, this is the most positive portrayal and like most complete picture of this guy that we're probably going to get, or he's probably going to, I don't think he's going to blow up. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you looked at his Instagram, but, I looked at it halfway through the movie. I kind of spoiled myself. Mm-hmm. He hasn't grown at all since the movie. I think in the movie he had 20,000 followers. He has 25,000 now. I think that what he wants is for the world to see him and stuff. And you're talking about exploitative nature. Like, I still think, sometimes I think about Tim and Eric, for example, and how they kind of exploit some people that are weirdos or might be mentally unstable or something.
Like David Liebehart.
David Liebehart, perfect example. But on the same token, without those quote-unquote exploiters, they never would have been seen in the first place.
Sure.
Like, yeah. I don't... David Liebehart is probably getting exploited by Tim and Eric, but also he's being seen by a million more people than would ever see him. This kid, Austin, probably being exploited by the filmmaker as well, but he's getting such a wide audience from this, you know.
In your view, who is the target audience of this movie is what, that's what I started thinking when you just brought that up just now, because I'm like, yeah, he didn't raise his Instagram profile because this is sort of a film for people that don't know anything about Instagram or social media.
It's definitely not for the girls.
Yeah.
This isn't for the little girls.
I feel like it is for like kind of like middle-aged people to be like, oh, thank God that's not happening. Didn't happen to me.
Yeah, yeah. No, they definitely don't, like... I'm sure there are positives to this culture and this life. Like, there was that one girl that talked about the Instagram boys tell her to stop cutting herself, and she stopped cutting herself.
Yeah.
You know, so there, like, are positives, but we barely saw that in here.
Yeah.
In this documentary. So I think it is for people that are outside of the world to kind of look in, get a, I think anthropological is the perfect word for it. It's like a survey of the culture. It's very much a snapshot of the time too.
Yeah. Right. This is going to age so weirdly.
Yeah. You were talking about people. Cause like you, I don't think people even use you now anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and you were talking about people kind of,
well, Musical.ly was, they did reference Musical.ly.
Yeah.
And that's Musical.ly kind of is the precursor to TikTok.
Yeah. And that's over now too. And I think all the platforms are going to kind of rise and die. Like, I don't know if, you know, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook will be here in 10 years. There might be new platforms.
They didn't even talk about Facebook much at all. I think Facebook has kind of become like their parents' medium.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm sure his mom has a Facebook.
Yeah,
yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I do think this is going to age very weirdly. This is going to be kind of like, did you see Life 2.0, that movie that was about, what is that? Second Life? Feels so aged in a certain way.
Did that come out like 5 years ago?
Yeah,
I think it did.
Yeah,
I did see that.
And it just came back on.
And Second Life isn't really a thing anymore.
I mean, it sort of exists in the same way like Friendster exists, or MySpace is still like there, but it has ceased being, you know, as it's not in the zeitgeist
anymore. Yeah, I'd imagine there's going to be like a second type of Second Life as VR gets more popular and stuff.
I feel like Second Life is like more of like an art piece, kind of exploratory, like new thing. I don't know. I think Second Life is like really like not something to necessarily compare like Twitter to or Facebook to.
Yeah.
But like
as a social media platform.
As a social, yeah, because there's also like IMBU.
Oh, IMVU. It's similar to Second Life.
Okay. Yeah.
And how people kind of just do that. Like, I feel like a lot of artists do that kind of thing. But I think, honestly, this is, like, fully meant for like middle-aged audiences. Yeah. Because there's so much more. Like anybody that's like a teen would be so bored.
Right.
Because there's like so they're like, yeah, I know. Like I you can like literally go on Instagram or like TikTok and like just like be inside of the documentary.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Like if it seems like if I was a teenager who used You Now, I would not care about this documentary.
No,
at all.
Not at all. Maybe the only,
it's like the equivalent of like being a meat eater and watching a factory farm documentary.
Right.
Like, I don't want to see this guy be sad.
Yeah. Yeah.
I honestly think Austin, I'm happy that he did that. Like not the documentary. The documentary, yeah, but like even deciding to put himself out there, maybe mm-hmm. he wasn't like super wise to quit high school, but like he was already failing his classes. He was getting like D's. He's having a really hard time. And if anything, he like learned the lesson of what it's like to like not succeed in something, you know, like he puts out this message of like, just keep trying. And then he had to live that. Like he had to like be like, oh fuck, it doesn't always work out.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like if he's trying to have like not an ordinary life living where he's already kind of done that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I believe in him.
Well, hopefully he can like internalize these lessons. And they didn't show it in the movie of him really processing anything. But mm-hmm. hopefully he will over the next years or so.
Yeah.
You know,
I was a little bit worried about his relationship with his brother because I thought the brother was maybe a little bit jealous at some point. Did it feel that way to you?
Yes.
Guys?
Yeah. They had when he went on tour, the brother was like, oh, I wish I was there. Da da da.
Yeah.
And like had that life and that experience for sure. And I mean, I guess in the same token, the brother's just as lost as Austin, but doesn't even have that opportunity.
Right. He seems. Know? Yeah. He seemed interesting to me, but also like kind of like his story could have been the same in the 70s, like yeah. the type of like dude he was turning into. It didn't really factor in the technology part of it.
So right. Much. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Like he would be like the older brother in like 1977.
The burnout older
yeah,
brother.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And we didn't really see his relationship to the technology either.
Right, right.
We saw that the mom watches Austin's streams.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like from a different room, you know, which is interesting. I wonder what her intention with that is, if it's just sweet or if she's like moderating him
mm-hmm.
or I would have liked to get more into the mom.
Yeah. I guess we heard a little bit about the abusive dad and then yeah. like the mom, I related to her frustration.
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, I'm going to have three kids living at home with me forever.
Yeah.
With her frustration.
Yeah, no, she was like, my life. I think she literally said at one point, you could probably find the clip. She was like, my life was bad. Like, and I want them to not have a bad life like I had.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, damn, she just accepts that.
Yeah.
Right on.
Austin's smart. He's got that potential about him. He's got that strive about him. The life they've had's taught them to be that the way that they are. I mean, their dad, I mean, he never contributed anything to nothing except for drugs and alcohol and beating me and beating them. That's it. And it's been a struggle. I just want them to succeed in life and do something with their life not be miserable, you know, like mine's been. They're the only things that's kept me going through the years and why it's not miserable.
When you're faced with problems in life, look at them from a different perspective, you know, because sometimes the problems are just like a lesson that's learned in life. And remember, life's not perfect. You're going to experience bad days and good days. You're going to have days where you just don't even feel like live anymore. But you got to remind yourself this is a part of life. But I love you guys so much. Peace. Te amo.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles, just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
I feel like we all need a little bit of Austin and we all need a little bit of Michael. Like, I think that's true. The balance, a little bit of the naivete and, like, you know, sweetness that he does have. And, like, not to, you know, I've talked a lot of shit on this kid, but I mean, he is a sweet kid.
No, for sure. I think his intentions were good.
Yeah.
Even though his motivational
dumb
message,
as bricks.
Yeah. Oh man. As dumb as they get.
Yeah.
But, it's good. Good for him. He's pretty. You know?
Yeah.
Even though his motivational messages were so vapid and like didn't really make any sense, I think he legitimately meant them and like wanted to make the world a better place.
Sure. And then I feel like a little bit of the strategic-ness of Michael.
An opportunist.
Yeah. I mean, okay. I think we're definitely like throwing, it is in a negative light. He is sort of like the cynical, manipulative kind of dude in this, but also like he's got sort of wizard magic. He can like make someone gain, like I was saying about my Twitter.
Yeah.
Like, I wish I could figure out some of this stuff.
Right.
Black hat shit, I guess. Yeah.
He's like a savage. I want to know how he is like, quote unquote, the only person that can get people a blue check just by like asking. How did he do that?
Yeah. That's
how old is he?
He's a little bit older than them. I think when this film is going, he's maybe 21.
That's what it said in that article.
Yeah. So he's like a little bit older than them. Like, yeah, he couldn't be the face of it, but he figured out, like, I guess it's a game. There's a really interesting thing, even about like, I listen to a podcast about podcasts. It was a podcast about these guys in Bangladesh who you could, you know, pay on Fiverr that had figured out a system to get you listeners or to raise your profile in the Apple podcast charts.
Mm.
And it's a similar kind of like, there is like, they did it like, oh, there's a secret sauce to it. I'm like, there's no secret sauce to it. I mean, the whole secret with that was they got a bunch of Apple IDs and they would just download podcasts and you only need to do like 50 a day to get something to be number one on the podcast charts, which is kind of just like, oh, so even the biggest podcast doesn't get more than 50 subscribers a day.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically all we learned from that is like, cause there's been no like kind of like exposure of the gaming, the system, the podcast charts. So, the verified check thing, I think you can just know people at Twitter. I know people that work at Twitter. It's just like, you just got to know the right person. And then they trust him. They trust him. He's basically like kind of like the, there's sort of like everyone needs to be the mediator between like young people and, people that have money.
Yeah,
that's basically what
he was the middleman.
Yeah.
Like that's, I guess, what a manager does, right?
Yeah,
yeah, and he did a good job. He's good at his job.
Yeah.
And
I mean, honestly, like working with teenage boys seems like a fucking nightmare.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, it also that's his shit. He loves it.
Yeah.
You know, like that's, and I think if he could, he would be one of them. You know?
Yeah, I think he fancies himself like more important than them because he is sort of the. But yeah, I think like if you had the skill set of a Michael and like the nature, the good naturedness of an Austin, that'd be like, that would speak well of the youth, I feel like.
No, for sure.
And instead we have like a Lex Luthor and like, I don't even know the better analogy. He's definitely not a Superman. I don't know. Just like, this, you know, sweet dumb kid.
Yeah, he's
and
like a golden a conniving retriever.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like a guy who's kind of conniving. Well, I think we've really, I don't know if there's much more to say about this. I mean, it's sort of like, it's a very well shot, very pretty piece.
Yeah, it was very artfully done.
Yeah. A lot of shirtless underage boys. Again, if you gender flip this movie, it would not, you could not really promote it on Hulu.
Yeah, it's not okay.
You'd be Jeffrey Epstein if you really gender flipped this movie all the way. But it definitely opened my eyes to some stuff, and I wish I could have kept them closed in some ways.
Yeah. One final note. I just want to say the one thing that I do envy about their lifestyle is the constant massages.
Oh, yeah. That's they're getting massages awesome. At the house.
Yeah. That's the only part of their lifestyle I would take and put onto myself. This movie's inspired me to get more massages.
Yeah.
I guess is what I'm saying.
If you get, there are some jobs you can get where they have massages in the office. In theory, they have that at my job, but I don't go in there to get massages.
Man, can I take
steal
your
my ID?
Massages?
Yeah, yeah, we're figuring out how way to game the system.
Gotta cast this doc. Gotta cast this doc.
This is where we play a game called Cast This Doc, where you think of anyone you would like to play. Someone, if they were going to make a biopic version of this doc, what did you have in mind, Elijah?
I went deep. I casted everybody. Yeah. I thought about it. So for Austin, that's our main boy. I was thinking, I'm thinking like producer mindset, like let's make this film a package. Let's make it sellable. So I was thinking we get the sexy it boy that right now that's in all the movies, Timothy Chalamet.
Oh, yeah. Timothy I can see Chalamet. Timothee.
Yeah, he's got the jawline. He's got the art house side.
Yeah.
And he's got the acting chops to back it up.
Yeah, I mean, he could just act like a kid from Tennessee.
Dumb 16-year-old. Yeah. Who was your one pick?
I didn't have a one for Austin because I was like, I feel okay that I don't know any underage actors by name.
Yeah.
I feel like that's an okay place to be in my life right now.
It's sad how many I have
listed to the
here.
Point where I'm like, when I saw Suspiria and I realized that was Chloe Moretz, I'm like, oh, the girl from Kick-Ass?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh, shit, she's an adult.
Yeah.
That happened.
It's wild.
I thought for Michael Wiest, did you see the shitty CGI Tintin movie that came out a couple years ago?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, just that character. That's just CGI Tintin. Yeah, the little poof of hair, the round face. And I just like the idea of Michael Wiest like going around the world with a dog solving mysteries.
That's great.
And then also trying to do some casting while he was doing it.
Yeah. I would love to cast Michael Wiest in things.
Yeah.
I think he has an acting career.
No, he could for sure. Yeah.
So I wrote for Michael Wiest's character, Bowen Yang.
Okay.
The new SNL cast member.
Yeah, yeah. Los Culturistas. Yeah.
Yeah. He's just, his impressions are hilarious. I could just in a parody sense, I could see him bodying that character and just killing me with how funny he does it, you know? Yeah, so I got Bowen for the manager. God, I went so deep. I'm not even going to list all of them. But for the LA talent, I wrote Barry Keoghan. I don't even know if that's how you pronounce his name. Have you seen Killing of a Sacred Deer?
Yeah.
He was the boy in Killing of a Sacred Deer.
That guy.
I just think he's such a fucking good actor.
Yeah, he's a good actor.
And he was just a young person, I thought. Yeah. It was a fucking good actor.
Yeah, no, just bring a lot of intensity to that.
Yeah,
to that
for the fights. Fights.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I went off for the Austin fans.
Oh, yeah.
So I wrote four of them. two of them are a little more
unnamed fans.
Yeah. But I thought the Pen 15 girls.
Oh yeah.
Would kill that.
Yeah.
As the Austin fans,
they're very funny.
And then, are you familiar with Meg Stalter? She's a Chicago comic. This might be getting a little too obscure.
I feel like I've seen some tweets or something.
Right on. She's killing it on Twitter now. But man, I think she would be hilarious. There was this
one teenage girl.
Yeah, there was this one fan that like Austin made a joke, and the fan's like, that was a good one. That was like a really good, joke. And like as they're following him around, fucking zombie horde.
Yeah.
And Meg Stalter like is that character. Moving on, I wrote Austin's mom. I thought she is an unexplored character. We could get really into her. So I was thinking prestige actress, Dame Judi Dench. Boom. To really bring some
Tennessee
Oscar.
Accent. Yeah.
Yeah, to bring some Oscar flair.
Yeah, totally.
Intensity. The poor. She's a queen, Dame Judi Dench. But I think she could really embody that poor, burnt out Tennessee woman as well.
I want to also throw this out as maybe more age appropriate, Olivia Colman.
Cool. Yeah. Oh my. Actually, dude, perfect. That's actually perfect.
I wasn't thinking British, but British people can always do American accents. Not the reverse.
And Barry Cogan from Killing of a Sacred Deer, he's Scottish.
Oh, he is?
He's a thick Scottish brogue. It's crazy. God. He might be Irish, and I'm being an asshole right now.
Yeah.
But
Barry could be Scottish.
Olivia Colman, just Yorgos Lanthimos actors.
That is actually what this should be. The biopic will be like Yorgos Lanthimos. Like,
if he directed Jawline, the movie,
that'd be amazing.
That'd be great.
I agree. Well, did you ever see The Wolf Pack? This was kind of weirdly reminding me of The Wolf Pack as well, which is about
a group of brothers
that grew up in this very sheltered house. It's almost an inverse thing because they don't have access to things, whereas this guy only has access to things, but he's isolated by being in Tennessee, and they're isolated by just being trapped in an apartment
in Brooklyn.
That's
crazy. That was a good documentary.
In Manhattan.
It might have been in Manhattan.
I want to say it's maybe in Manhattan. But there's also it's also young female directors who really they really play with the aesthetic of documentary.
Yeah.
There's a very stylish documentary.
And in The Wolf Pack, they buddy up with the director too, right?
Yeah.
They're like her friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like that was an unexplored part of this too. Just like how he must have, a couple of shots I thought were also drone shots at ground level. Mm. I wasn't sure what was going on with some of the shots, but I feel like there could have been something about the relationship. She clearly likes this kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, for sure. And she was not in it at all.
Yeah.
There was none of her.
She did not include herself. I also wanted to throw in that I sent you that link to Twin Heads, which is, I was just looking up interviews with her on YouTube. And that's a film I think she made for Noisy.
Yeah.
About these brothers who are in a band called
The Garden. Yeah.
Who are like, we're actually like, that was to me more, I could have seen a feature length about those guys.
Right.
To me, that was a lot more interesting, and it was only like 13 minutes.
Yeah. Well, at least they had character to them.
They're so weird.
They're weird dudes. We have a
crossover.
Good amount of mutual friends and stuff. Yeah. And they're
Orange County weird band that were models.
Yeah. Well, so that was the connection.
Oh.
Is she, all of her, she focuses on male models.
Yves Saint Laurent did a whole thing where he was like taking musicians from the LA scene and putting them in Runway.
Oh.
And they were like a part of that.
Oh, is that what it was?
They came before like other kids in the LA scene, but
Who else did they cast and do that?
Like Austin Feinstein from Slow Hollows. I'm forgetting what's his name.
Val Kilmer's son.
Oh, really?
Jack Kilmer, yeah.
Yeah.
These are like Burger Records people.
Yeah.
Okay, that's so funny that Burger Records is like the farm team for Yves Saint Laurent. It's what we learned today.
I know.
That's so weird.
You gotta sell
White
out
Fang is like, it'd be funny if the NAR tapes guys.
One day, man. Yeah. One day.
They made like a sitcom for like.
Yeah, they got a Comedy Central pilot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, look, like we're not doing that.
No, no. And they said it took, I talked to them about it. It was a 3-year process.
Oh, man.
For that. Yeah.
Wild. Ridiculous. We also want to do Pitch the Doc, where you talk about something that you think would be an interesting documentary to watch or that you'd like to see made that's not already a documentary.
I got a juicy one. I got a really, really good one, I think, that honestly, like, somebody, if there's documentary filmmakers that listen to this, they're going to steal it and run with
it. But they won't have stolen. They have to. There's also a way that we can kind of copyright the idea by putting it on a podcast.
Right. Oh, hey,
so like, yeah, Elijah gets the producer credit.
Yes, yes.
You know, it can be below the line producer credit.
I just need 10%. That's all I ask. 10%. So we are in South Central Los Angeles right now. Next door to us is Numero Uno Supermarket. Which is a supermarket chain in South Los Angeles. There's about 13 locations. Most people know this. Numero uno means number one in Spanish. They want to be number one. And I would always go into this supermarket and I'd always be like, this is the most undermanaged supermarket I've ever been in. There's always like expired stuff. There's always empty shelves. There's not enough employees. It feels Lynchian almost. It feels like you went into a bizarro world whenever you go there. So I was like, what is up with Numero Uno? So I Googled it, and Numero Uno's founder, George Torres, is essentially ran it like a cartel. And it's a crazy story. And there's only like two news articles about it. And pretty much he started as a cart on a corner selling food. And by 2005, he was indicted by the FBI for selling stolen merchandise, hiring illegal immigrants, bribing politicians. If you were caught shoplifting there, they would lock you in a room and extort money from you. And he hired employees to murder people.
Wow. And it's still a functional store?
And it's still on icing, cherry on top, George Torres got away with it all off of technicality. He is a free man who is still, I believe, a business partner in Numero Uno. I don't think he's still the owner per se, but he's still involved in it. Oh, and they would smuggle cocaine.
You basically are shopping at like the dark web.
Yes. Yeah. The dark web cartel of supermarkets.
Oh my God.
And it's such a, I love, do you ever see Gringo?
John
McAfee documentary.
Yeah,
yeah. I love like documentaries about like these like low-key insane criminals that like we don't really know about and stuff. And I feel like there could be an amazing documentary about George Torres, his story, you know, him coming up and stuff. And it would be amazing if you could get him.
Yeah.
You know, like, and maybe some of the people that he extorted, you know, like, you know, with blurred faces and stuff.
Yeah.
I've always thought it'd be a great documentary. I've tried to write stand-up about it, but I'm almost like, I'm almost worried about getting a hit on me, you know?
Yeah,
like,
right.
Is it dangerous to talk about?
I don't know, man. It's like sort of like Vegas comics sometimes had to work with mobsters.
Right,
A lot of New York comics have talked about like being at shows where it's like people they grew up with that are mobsters.
Yeah, well, I think the comedy club circuit was like founded on mob money,
yeah.
Right?
It's interesting. The early punk scene, I talked to someone about this, like a lot of those, like even California, a lot of the clubs that would have punk shows were actually like mob connected.
Right, yeah. Right. And they just needed to always have shows there.
Yeah, which was
so
like there was
could launder money.
I wish I could remember the name of the band. I'll try to put it in the show notes if I can find it. There was a band that was really involved in, I think, the early punk scene that I think was maybe from like Stockton or something. It was like the daughter of one of these guys became like this punk singer of like a weird new wavy punk band.
Right on.
And like, so like she discovered it probably because they were doing the shows and like she became like a punk singer.
Damn.
It's super. I got to find the name of that because that could be a great one as well.
Yeah, yeah. No, that would be super interesting as well.
I wanted to throw in my cast, pitch a doc, which is, did you guys read that article in The Cut about the Carolyn Calloway story?
I don't know if I read the article, but I'm familiar with the story.
Right. Yeah. It also relates to, we're talking about like social media scam type situations.
Do you know Caroline Calloway?
Yeah. The story. Oh, yeah. So the story of the Caroline Calloway thing is she had a very popular Instagram. She was like a American student who was like living abroad in Europe for college. And she had a friend the whole time who was actually kind of helping her write all her Instagram posts. So basically, like, this friend wrote this kind of expose piece for The Cut about how she was kind of the ghostwriter for a lot of Caroline's stuff. Caroline Calloway got, like, a $300,000 book advance. to write a book based on her Instagram. And the friend was actually like, it's a very weird like frenemy story, right? It's like two girls that are college age that have, one is like kind of envious of the other one. And they're like, one's like kind of clever and sarcastic. The other one's just like pretty and rich. And they have this weird dynamic the whole time where like, I'm forgetting the name of the writer, but if you look this up on The Cut, it's the woman who wrote the piece kind of explaining her connection to her, to Carolyn. So basically she had a book deal. The friend was helping her, you know, write up all the stuff for the book. And then she never turned the book in and owes the publisher like $100,000.
Yeah.
And then had a similar TanaCon situation where she was trying to do some kind of like wellness convention thing. And then like was supposed to make it a tour, and then it turned into just being in New York. And then she had to just basically like cancel the whole thing. And people had already given her like $150 for a ticket to go. So, yeah, it's that to me, there's a lot of story there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of story 100%. To dig into, a lot of like, kind of like relates to this in a way. It's like new social media world that people over, you know, 35 probably don't really fully get. And then, just female friendship.
Yeah.
Again, like a Michael Wiest situation or Amadeus Solieri, like the person who's like, you're the face of the thing, I'm the brains of the thing. And that's always like a weird tension that exists, I think. So I think there's a lot in that Carolyn Calloway story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's the idea also that these people aren't held accountable. They can kind of run wild and do scams like that mm-hmm. without much retribution
yeah,
or like
yeah.
fallback, fallout.
Yeah, yeah, you wanted to go to like a crystal conference. You're gonna get what you basically get what you pay for.
So, yeah,
yeah. We also like to just ask a few questions. Elijah, what is your pet peeve?
Oh man, pet peeve. God,
this is kind of the get to know you part of this
right,
show. We put
right.
at the end.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know. I'm a pretty chill guy. I don't have many things that get to me. What's a pet peeve of mine? What's something that I always get annoyed by?
That people trying to gossip with you?
Oh, I'm not a gossip at all.
Oh,
I
really?
I have trouble. I get really disturbed about shit talking and stuff. And yeah, not
And you've
really.
Been in comedy how long?
Yeah, no, I know. You'd be amazed how many people I don't like, but I don't tell people that.
No, but I feel like shit talk, it's not even that. Because like, I feel like you could... I feel like you're around people who should talk like comedy, whatever, but like hearing about like different friends' personal information.
Oh.
I respect boundaries.
Yeah.
I have good boundaries.
That's a pet peeve.
Yeah.
Yeah, people with bad boundaries.
Yeah. Oh, well, there we go. I don't like narcissists.
Oh.
Yeah, sure.
Again, a comedian, Elijah Katz.
Follow me online on all my things.
Yeah. Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Oh, gosh. I feel like I'm like just about 5 years from making a little bit of money. So I feel like in 5 years, I'm hopefully going to be making a little bit of comedy money. That's mm-hmm. the goal. I don't think I'm going to be stable or established, but hopefully flat broke, not working a day job. We'll
yeah.
see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it is LA. It is hard to get paid to do this in LA.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who is someone that people mistake you for?
Stephen Wright.
Okay.
Yeah. Or other Jewish comics. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sophie, same questions for you. Pet peeve.
My pet peeve. Oh, God.
Bad boundaries. Good boundaries.
You know what? Bad boundaries. I feel like bad boundaries is like such a blanket for all anybody's pet peeve.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I guess like... people being like weaponizing their charisma, I guess, like being like violently performative to the point where they like are rude to people or they like don't listen to other people. That bothers me
because
mm-hmm. I love performative people, but like, you know,
Sophie's a lot smarter than me.
Then was the other question?
5 years.
5 years. Where do you see yourself alive?
Okay. 5 years. Oh my God. Okay. I really have to kick in my like narcissism right now, because if where I want to be in 5 years is probably have like working on a ton of different projects with different people, like collaborating a lot and like somehow making enough money from all of those or some of those projects that I'm able to like travel from place to place to collaborate in different cities. And yeah, so that's where I see myself in 5 years.
And someone that people mistake you for.
Oh, okay. Recently. So I don't agree with this. I think it's like more of a vibe thing. But like since the movie Once Upon a Time in Hollywood has come out, literally people have like DM'd my friends from like different countries have like DM'd me. Like friends have come up, people have come up to me at bars. Like so many people have told me I look like the main Manson girl.
Margaret Qualley.
Yes.
Yes.
But I maybe kind of like 25%, but not enough for like the amount of people who have told me that recently.
I told her she looked like a Manson girl.
Pretty sexy.
Yeah. Yeah. People that are just like coming up to you randomly saying that.
Because I'm like tall and have brown hair.
Yeah.
I think that's like similar skin tone.
I think you also look like you would kill for a cult leader.
Yeah, totally. Like, I'm like a free spirit who would like, I'm so such a free spirit that I'd like, you know, take a fetus out of a a pregnant woman.
She did take a felony charge for somebody, so it's not coming from nowhere.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that sounds like a documentary in and of itself. I want to thank you guys for letting me hang out in your place. Elijah, thanks so much.
Thanks for coming over and inviting me to do this.
Yeah.
You're the man.
Thanks. Sophie?
Yeah. Thank you for letting me like randomly interject
throughout. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for listening. You can find out more about SupDoc at supdocpodcast.com. Recapping reality since 2015. Our theme song was written by David Siegel, and our show is engineered by Will Scoville. For as little as $1 a month, you can donate to the show through our Patreon page, patreon.com/supdocpodcast. If you want to help us in other ways, please share the show. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Find Paco and George's comedy gigs on the About Us page on the site. SupDoc is by doc fans for doc fans. So if you want to advertise with SupDoc, got a film or opinions, hit us up. We'd love to hear from you and what you're docking out on. Email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.